Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin. The opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu.
Old people ought to be the futurists. We look at the future out of our past and lovingly regard the future with the hope that the future may avoid some of the pitfalls that we've fallen into.
Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, a podcast on mental health issues. I'm your host, Ike Evans, and today we're delighted to bring you episode 110, Women Make History, Maggie Kuhn and the Gray Panthers.
When we talk about well-being, for me, it's the person's ability to thrive.
Having their basic needs met, as well as having community and connection.
I think looking at an individual or a community in its entirety.
These are the moments where it's not only about celebrating, but it's about connecting with people and connecting with the community around you.
Well-being is when you are feeling kind of your best, and best, I think, is a moving target.
And supporting one another, continually talking to one another, sharing our resources, a community, that golden thread.
As a foundation, we believe that we're most effective in transforming mental health at the community level when we focus on historically excluded or marginalized populations. On numerous occasions, past and present, we have made the connection between mental health and well-being on the one hand, and a more just and equitable world on the other. In recognition of Women's History Month, we're exploring once again the relationship between well-being and equity. This time, we are reaching deep into our archives to share a conversation between two history makers, Maggie Kuhn and Bert Krueger Smith. Bert Krueger Smith, some of you may already know. She was a stalwart for the Hogg Foundation, either working for or involved with the foundation from 1952 until she retired in 1983. She left an indelible mark as one of the most influential employees in the foundation's history as a program officer, writer, speaker, and radio host. Along with mental health, Bert was passionate about elder issues. In fact, she's considered an icon by at least one other organization, Age of Central Texas, which she co-founded in 1985. Age's mission is to help older adults and their caregivers thrive as they navigate the realities and opportunities of aging and caregiving. Bert Krueger Smith's advocacy for the elderly connects her with our other history-making woman, and really the focus of this episode, Maggie Kuhn, an American activist who founded the Gray Panthers movement in 1970. The Gray Panthers became known for advocating nursing home reform and fighting ageism. And Kuhn herself established a reputation as a fighter for progressive causes. What you are about to hear is from a 1979 episode of The Human Condition, a radio series produced by the Hogg Foundation that ran from 1971 to 1983 on KUT. The show's host, Bert Krueger Smith, interviews Maggie Kuhn about her life and work. One thing that stood out to me about this interview is that it really puts at center stage the agency and creativity of older people, challenging the familiar stereotypes of old people as either passive recipients of charity and benevolent attention or neglect. How people empower themselves to make change in their communities is at the center of the Hogg Foundation's work. Maggie Kuhn passed away in 1995. Much of what you're about to hear in this episode may at first sound like narratives from long ago, but pieces still ring true today. In particular, I think you should listen for what Maggie Kuhn has to say about the challenges of organizing and mobilizing a specific community for the sake of doing effective advocacy, and see how those lessons might apply to your work or your community. And so, here we go.
From Communications Center, the University of Texas at Austin, this is another program in the series, The Human Condition.
Old people ought to be the futurists. We look at the future out of our past and lovingly regard the future with the hope that the future may avoid some of the pitfalls that we've fallen into.
Produced in association with the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health at UT Austin, these programs are about people and mental health as a part of every human experience. Here is your producer and host, Bert Krueger Smith.
Maggie Kuhn, founder and national convener of the Gray Panthers, is this week's guest on The Human Condition. Ms. Kuhn, I think everybody in the country has heard of you and has heard of the Gray Panthers. How did you become a Gray Panther, and how did you start this rather militant-sounding organization?
Well, there were six of us who were forced to retire from our jobs when we had reached that age, that cutoff date of being 65. We were doing interesting work in the church and in educational institutions, and we were very sad about leaving our jobs. We were sad about leaving each other, and we contemplated the future with some apprehension. And we met in response to a memo that I wrote. You know, you always have to write a memo to get things going. And I raised the question as to what we were going to do with the rest of our lives. And this proved to be a question that took us several lunches to attempt to answer, and resulted in our writing a collective memo to about 150 people that we knew between the six of us who had retired or who were about to retire. It was a kind of a manifesto saying, look, we've got things to do in the world, and we can't give up. And we need each other to use our new freedom responsibly. That was the beginning of it. And then I wrote the memo and got things going from a correspondence point of view while I was still on the payroll of the United Presbyterian Church in the Office of Church and Race, where I still had a secretary and access to the Xerox machine. You know, you can't do much without a mimeograph and the Xerox.
So without the Xerox machine in your job, there may have been no Gray Panthers.
Well, it would have been very small, and it would have been very fumbling and hard to get going. But the issue that we decided that we wanted to devote time and energy and experience to was the war in Vietnam. We hated the war. We knew that it was illegal and immoral. And we decided that our job was to stand with the young people, the young who were being drafted, the young who were resisting the draft, and the young whose lives were being destroyed by that horrible war.
Is that why you chose the name of the Gray Panthers? Is that why you got a rather militant-sounding title?
Well, the name was given to us by WPIX-TV in New York City. Two of us were on a talk show, and we were explaining what we were attempting to do. By that time, we were beginning to reach out to the young people and forge a coalition, a connection between the old and the young. And the producer of this particular program said that he didn't like our name. I hesitate to give it to you, our former name. It's so unimaginative and so square. It was a consultation of older and younger adults for social change. Isn't that awful?
Not as good as Grey Panthers.
So he said, that's a terrible name. I have a name for you. You're the Grey Panthers. And we immediately adopted it as a kind of a fun name, you know, our long square name and then Grey Panthers in parenthesis. And then we discovered that it had a positive PR asset and that it really connoted the kind of radical view of ourselves and of our later years that was in line with our purpose.
The thing that interested me most, I think, in listening to you give a public lecture was to find how many young people were there.
Yes.
I had always imagined the Grey Panthers as a group of older people, vigorous older people, yes, but older nevertheless. Do you have young members?
Yes, we do. We've recently made a study of our membership and affiliates, and we have about 60% of our affiliates are people over 60, and 40% of them are people under 30. Well, I guess it's not quite as absolute as that, but the largest number is still older, but a very short, a very small difference between the numbers that are young and middle-aged. We're now in that's about a year and a half since the survey was taken. It was a small sampling, not an absolute sampling. We're now in a better position to get a more accurate picture of our age range. And we have a growing number of people in their late 50s.
Now, how many Grey Panthers are there?
There are about 50,000 of us across the country. And we have 110 groups, including a group in Austin that is relatively new, but vigorous and growing a marvelous coalition of young people and older people.
When you gave this public lecture in Austin, Mrs. Kuhn, you gave a different side to the picture of being old. Most people, if one says old, think of tired, bedraggled, ailing, unenthusiastic. You described older people as futurists. Now, most of us don't think that old people have a lot of future. What did you mean when you talked about futurists?
Well, we have an advantage in looking over the past and viewing the present and the future from an historical point of view. There's that marvelous inscription on the Archives Building in Washington, the past is prologue. I think that's a very good way to summarize our future orientation out of an appreciation of history and the hard lessons of history and the extraordinary rates of social change that my generation, I'm 74 going on 75, my generation has witnessed extraordinary social change. Now, out of that experience, that human experience over a 70-year lifespan, we have some intimations, not an absolute crystal ball, but very clear perceptions about what the future may be. And we certainly, if we've learned anything from history, there are things about our history that we must avoid in the future.
In your talk, Mrs. Kuhn, you also mentioned that there were three major issues that surfaced if we were going to have coalitions for a new age. Do you want to talk about them?
Well, the first, obviously, is to recognize the fact that war is an inappropriate way to settle international disputes in this new age. The possession of the nuclear bomb and other kinds of nuclear-powered weaponry make war unfeasible and impossible for the next decades. We simply have to find other ways of resolving international disputes, making the UN a stronger instrument for peace and harmonizing the differences between the nations. But I like to think that there can be, in a place like Austin, where there are streams of students from many cultures, and the state of Texas representing Chicanos and Indians and blacks and Anglos. There's a rich cultural diversity, and out of that new understanding of the need for international peace and justice and concord, maybe the people can make some overtures to each other, people-to-people exchanges. I'm not sure whether I remembered to say in the lecture Sunday that there is the International Assembly on Aging that the UN has mandated to be held in the fall of 1982. The Grey Panthers have observer status at the United Nations. We're very proud of that. We were very much interested that the International Assembly that the UN mandated in last year when the General Assembly met was pressured championed by the third world countries, not the Western world. But they were anticipating some enormous changes that were going to come to them with the changing demography and the large numbers of people in the third world who were living into their late years. And as the Western world has influenced the third world, being again displaced from places of respect and a certain kind of status, being declared waste folk, the way in which many Americans and other Western elders have been sidetracked, so to speak. So we think of the new instrumentality for peace as being a people-to-people operation. And we like to think that this International Year on Aging as being a time when the elders of the world get together and say, no more nukes, no more war. Let's settle these things as reasoned, reasonable people reasoning together.
That's certainly a major, major issue. Now, Mrs. Kuhn, that's one out of three. You said there were three major
issues.
Now,
the second major issue that I think we have to tackle, and that is the health care system. We have sickness care, not health care. We have the most sophisticated kind of crisis intervention medicine that there can be anywhere. In the state of Texas, you've got marvelous, sophisticated medical sources and resources, medical schools, many medical students, all kinds of hospitals. But we think that a new direction for health care, which focuses on prevention and wellness rather than sickness, must be perceived by the American people if we are to survive into the 80s and the next decade.
Don't you think that's coming about a little bit these days with the emphasis on health food and jogging and taking care of one's bodies?
I think there is a very encouraging interest. And I'm glad that you mentioned it, because we are seeing that we are responsible. The doctors may help us, but actually we're the ones who are responsible for maintaining our health and for healing ourselves. The Grey Panthers, along with the American Medical Students Association and the American Public Health Association, have supported one of the bills that has been introduced in Congress that would establish a Health Service Act. It was introduced by Congressman Ron Dellums from Oakland, California. Mr. Dellums is one of the leaders of the Black Caucus of the House of Representatives, a very wise man, and his bill would establish a community-based, consumer-controlled health system that would be free for all, that would be paid for out of public funds, public revenues, payroll taxes, and income taxes, but that would be less costly than the bill that we now pay for sickness care.
All right, that's war and health now. We have a third issue.
The third is the whole economic system. We have fiercely competed with each other. We've made our modern lives very stressful in this business of winning and competing in the marketplace. Now, competition is probably built in, but it can be mitigated and minimized to some degree in favor of cooperation. And we would like to see, in terms of our present economic disarray, the Carter administration has not been able to deal with inflation. We've now got double-digit inflation. We've got higher prime rate interest rates than we've ever had in the history of American banking. We have a continued unemployment. We have aggravated poverty that has been inherited from one generation to the other. The gulf between the affluent and the impoverished widens with every decade.
May I interject? Don't we also have a lot of older people who have retired comfortably and who have now grown old and then poor? We have a big population of poor old people.
Yeah, and particularly in the southern states where the climate is beautiful and more kindly, and people who have saved and who have thought when they retired that their pensions were going to be adequate for their old age, find that with double-digit inflation, they are poor. And they're very apprehensive about being able to survive in their later years, particularly with the fact of living longer. So we're saying there ought to be food cooperatives. There ought to be housing cooperatives. There ought to be health co-ops. That there are many things that we could do, energy cooperatives, that there are many things that cooperators can do together in small groups that we cannot do independently. I would love to see solar greenhouses and solar heating systems and windmills installed as alternative sources of energy that could help to reduce the enormous energy bills for lighting and electricity and oil that make retirement living so perilous.
Maggie Coon, isn't there another great problem, and that is that our legislation is written so that people who need minimal kinds of help cannot get it in the community, so that the alternatives between living independently and living totally dependently are very, very slim. What can we do about it?
Well, we need to set up in terms of neighborhood development and neighbors returning to the idea that neighbors looked after neighbors. And along with that, we need to maintain people in their own homes, as you say. And we think that there's a whole new population, a new generation of women particularly, who are uniquely qualified to be a new cadre of deliverers of care to enable people to stay in their own homes. And I'm thinking of the displaced homemakers, who could, with training and a minimal training and a certain kind of credentialing and some salary remuneration, enable many, many people who would ultimately have to be institutionalized remain in their own homes.
You had some very interesting ideas of family, which I think tie right in with what you're saying now. Yeah. Let's talk about family, because most people think a family is mother, father, and 2.6 children.
Yes, yes.
What else can a family be, Maggie Coon?
Well, a family can be what I grew up in, an extended family. I was born in my grandmother's front bedroom, and I lived in her home as a child growing up. I loved her, and she loved my brother and me. And this was a lovely way to live. There were four generations at one time, because great-grandma lived with with that household. But today I don't see any way that that can be reconstructed. People are scattered in this mobile society and will continue to move in all directions. The possibility, though, of redefining the family is a very lively one. And this is what we've been doing, and we've been using a definition that the American Home Economics Association adopted in 1975. A family unit, as we look at it, and as we define it, is two or more persons who share resources, goals, and lifestyles over time.
Which is quite different from the lawsuit, which I'm sure you remember, where there were 12 older people living in a large house and the neighbors filed suit because they were not related. The judge went out and spent a day in their home and came back and said he had not ever seen a more loving or caring family and ruled in favor of the older people.
That was a classic and very, very important case. And I would hope that this definition of the family and the precedent of that particular legal decision might pave the way for changes in the zoning and housing laws of our country, and particularly the several states and urban places where the zoning laws severely restrict non-kins people from living together.
Many older people have a great sense of powerlessness, feeling that there is not much they can do. You delineated some jobs that were left to be done. Let's hear them.
Well, first of all, as we've been visiting, old people ought to be the futurists. We look at the future out of our past and lovingly regard the future with the hope that the future may avoid some of the pitfalls that we've fallen into. For instance, our dependence on chemicals, the way in which we've over-chemicalized the good earth, and in favor of a short, immediate, highly profitable cash crop, we are steadily eroding the soil. Now, old farmers know that you rotated the crops and that you used a natural fertilizer from the manure of horses and mules and farm animals. We also think that old people have the time, particularly if they've left their jobs, to monitor what is going on in public bodies, to watch the courts, to watch when city councils and township commissions meet. And as I say, become watchdogs and watch bitches, complaining, barking, you know, the way watchdogs do when the public safety is violated. And the watch bitches and the watch dogs watching the councils at work, the commissions as they deliberate, are going to have a much wider understanding of how public policy is made, how far short it sometimes falls in terms of the real needs of the people. And they are also able to, out of their sense of experience, blow the whistle on some of the things that they feel are going to be corruptive and contrary to the larger public interest.
Maggie Kuhn, I don't want our time to go before you have the chance to tell us what it takes to survive with zest.
Well, first of all, you have to have a goal. You have to have a purpose. And the purpose is larger than you are. It's something that encompasses your neighbor and something that you can do with and for your neighbor. The second is that you have to have a kind of sturdy esteem. You have to stop saying, well, I'm too old to do that, or I'm just an old lady. Don't ask me anymore. You have to recognize that out of the experience that has taught us much, we have much to give, and we must give. When we use our age as an excuse for not being involved, we're copping out. The third thing that we must do to survive is to develop a new lifestyle. We have to stop just limiting and restricting our ideas and associating only with people who are like us. We have to begin to reach out, particularly to the young, and to find ways in which we can, with them, be agents of social change, working for a just and human society. And when we've done those three things, when we found a new goal, a new attitude and a self-awareness, and a new understanding of our role in society, we have built for ourselves a new community, a loving, caring, supportive community that will serve us well until closure.
Thank you very much, Maggie Kuhn. This week's guest on The Human Condition has been Maggie Kuhn, founder and national convener of the Gray Panthers.
We hope that you enjoyed that conversation. As I said in the intro, how people mobilize and organize for the sake of making a change toward well-being in their communities is an abiding concern for the Hogg Foundation, one that we have explored numerous times on the podcast. In fact, in episode 54 of Into the Fold, Raising the Voices of Individuals with IDD, we explored themes of self-determination and self-advocacy through the eyes of James Meadors, an advocate for those with intellectual and developmental disabilities, as well as a survivor of sexual assault. Here is James talking about what he has learned.
And I decided to kick another notch about my life and the struggles I deal with to help people realize you're not alone, and also educate professional staff how to support someone who's been in trauma and to help them to grow as a self-advocate.
I have included a link to the full episode in the show description, so please check that out. And that does it for this episode. We're glad you could join us. If you have comments or anything you would like to share about the podcast, feel free to reach out to us at intothefold@austin.utexas.edu. Into the Fold is all one word. Especially thoughtful comments will be acknowledged during a future episode. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others, so it is as well that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Please leave us a review, subscribe to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, or TuneIn. Thanks for joining us.